हरिः ॐ सहनववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे
Bhagavat Sandarbha Adhyayana 4 Adhikarna 5 Bhagavan is the object of all Vedic knowledge. With this in mind, Prahlad has said, I consider Dharma, Artha, and Kama, knowledge of Atma, knowledge of Karma, argumentation, justice, and various occupations to be part of the Vedas recommended for some people. But I consider that surrender to the Supreme Lord, who is one's friend, is recommended in the Vedas for the saintly people. Srimad Bhagavatam 7.6.26. How the scriptures can indicate Bhagavan beyond words. So, I have a tendency to put, this is how. Right? Because it is saying how it's done. But you may or may not quite catch it. Because the other ones are concluding by, thus spoke, like this. So Prahlad Myers is also pointing out that all these different things, they're there for different people. But the surrender to the Lord, that's for the saintly people. They may be using all these different aspects, the Dharma, Artha, Kama, knowledge of Atman, knowledge of the Karma, all these different things. But it's surrender to the Lord that's the main thing. Because that's the primary. And then these others become secondary, when they're useful, they're used. But for the others, they become very important to them, because otherwise, what is their process of elevation? How are they connecting themselves to the Lord, in some way or another? No, because they're not surrendering, so it's not direct. So how do they indirectly connect? By through following the rules and regulations of the scriptures. Since Krishna is Shastra. Krishna is the knowledge. Right? Does that make sense? So, and that's just the culture. So the same culture is being followed by both the saintly people and the general people. And general here we mean those who are not surrendering to the Lord. But everybody is somehow or another in some way connecting to the Lord. In an indirect way, but there is a connection to the Lord. And there's some conscious effort in that matter. Well, then the Vikarmis, you see, they don't even know about the Vedas. They don't even know about these things. And so, therefore, then they don't have... Where's the endeavor? Right? So unless they're following some other religious system, and then how much they're making that endeavor to try to bring their life in line, even though there's no real regulation, but there's a sentiment, there's a feeling to kind of like regulate your life, not do just anything you like. Because it's not proper, it's not religious, A good religious person wouldn't do this. So even that much is some regulation, there is some piety there. Right? But the Vedas is more scientific, so the regulation is greater, more exact, more actually in line with, it has less speculation. Right? They save the speculation for the philosophy. Religion's pretty straightforward. And then for the devotees, how much it's supporting their service to the Lord, then that's what they do. But they have to see their service to the Lord, meaning the overall, how it pleases Krishna, not service to the Lord of how I project is the best. I may do that in the beginning. Just like, let's say, I'm trying to organize something. So, I'm doing that for Krishna. So in the beginning, I'm going to look at what's the best organization for, you know, applying, you know, this in this situation. Let's say a festival or something. Then, in doing that, I'm going to, you know, exactly get done everything that would be efficiently the best for management. Right? But now in that, the festival is called Utsava, one who lifts you above the savas, or the difficulties of the material world. You know, the day-to-day life. That's what a festival is for. It lifts you above the miseries that go on in your day-to-day life. Right? So, therefore, in the festival, you're having all these things. Now, in let's say I'm trying to accomplish, you know, this very well-regulated, you know, how you say, you know, well-organized, well-oiled, you know, machinery of this festival. And in doing so, I'm yelling and screaming at everybody and getting on their case and they're so stupid and whatever it is. And it's going exactly clockwork and everything, and at the end of the day, it worked out, everything worked perfectly. So my management went very well for Krishna. And that I'm working and trying to do that for Krishna, then that's a plus. But that it didn't come out to be an utsava for anyone else, because I made everyone's life miserable, because they weren't on the plan or something like that. So then it, as a festival, it actually failed, and so the mood was not good. So the other devotees were not as inspired. So how will that please Krishna? So with time, as I get purified, then I have to understand is no, it's about making... So there might be some delays, some this and that, and so it works. You know, like that. You know, something happened and, you know, so the kirtan was so ecstatic, so you let it run for those few more minutes. And then at a proper point, then you let them know, okay, we have to go on, there's more things. But the other, you just come out there, okay, well, you know, so what's what you, I told you, you're supposed to stop at, you know, 6 o'clock. That's, you know, it's 6 o'clock, you know, after that. Why are you going on? You know, you guys are so irresponsible. And they were so absorbed in the kirtan. You know? So you let things, you know, flow, you know, like this and that. And then you see as it comes out much nicer. Then everybody remembers. Otherwise, this festival, definitely everyone will remember. But they will not remember it in a favorable way. So that's the whole thing, is that when we say is, you know, we're using these secondary aspects of knowledge in our service and how they're helpful, but it has to be helpful for the direct of pleasing Krishna, of becoming Krishna conscious. So if you're in a leadership role, then you're supposed to help others become Krishna conscious. And just being focused on management, it's a secondary, and not on Krishna, one's missed the point. So that's what Prahlad Maharaj is saying. This is for some people, and the others for the saintly people. So it's not that they ignore these, they're used as they're important. And whether or not, yes?
We would expect in this particular field, and Prahlad Maharaj says that, you know, some ritual is for some people.
Yes.
But then bhakti is for everybody. But then suddenly he says it's only for saintly people.
Yes, but the jiva is by nature saintly. So what we're saying is that, you know, we're talking about the qualities of the jiva and that. The qualities of the jiva has some inherent qualities, right, that are just there in the nature of the jiva. And when they come into the material world, those start to become covered, right, because they're not connected to Krishna, so those are pieties. And those are pieties connected to the jiva. You know, every individual can follow these pieties. Then more than those pieties, those will be connected with your particular conditioning. You have a specific conditioning, so therefore you doing this activity, that's pious. You not doing that, that's impious. But for someone else, what you're not supposed to do, that's what they're supposed to do. So then the piety is conditioned. So there's the constitutional piety, and there's the conditioned piety. Right? So in here is that it's for the saintly people, those who understand and see the importance of the constitutional, that's for them. Those who can't, then the conditional, then yes, they have to act according to conditional piety. So this whole thing that certain modern things of certain regions of the world, and in that region certain groups of people, and within that certain group, you know, you and your three friends. Let's not say, well, okay, we're stretching it. We're using friends in the broadest sense possible. Basically acquaintances that we like to call friends, but they're, you know, when push comes to shove, they're not going to be there. Yeah. So, and so then it's so narrow, the application of that condition, you know, how you say, religiousness or morality, that it only applies to, it's only important to us. To others who have different conditioning, it doesn't apply. To the mission of Lord Chaitanya, it has no application. You know, so therefore, if it's good for us, by following this set of morality, I am more Krishna conscious, then it's a useful. But if by following it, I'm not Krishna conscious, and I harass others, and it distracts them from Krishna consciousness, then what's the point at all? Is that... So, therefore, appreciating that constitutional position from, and the constitutional position means it's the nature of the soul, and the nature of the soul is to connect it to Krishna. Because as soon as you don't connect it to Krishna, then it starts to take on the conditional nature. Does that make sense? You know. Yeah. So it's you know, so like saying truthfulness. So that means you don't do the opposite, which is lying. But what is truth? In the spiritual world, there's no lying, because everything's about truth. And what's truth? Krishna. So that means everything is about Krishna. Everything's seen in the context of Krishna. And so therefore, they'll speak everything in that context. Right? But the different tastes they have towards Krishna, the different aspects of which qualities that then they're impressed with about Krishna, that will be unique between the different individuals and the devotees. Right? Is that okay? Yeah.
I think in Bhagavad Gita it says Param Satyam Dhimahi, we meditate on that supreme truth.
Yes.
So everything connected to that truth is truth.
Everything yes.
Else is relative.
Yes, everything else is relative. So that's why when journalists say we only want the truth, no, they don't. They just want facts that are going to be economically viable for them, for them and their company. That's all, you know. So there's no question of truth, because truth means it's connected to Krishna. You know, so you have to understand, you know, in the proper context, what these constitutional qualities are. But they're all in connection with Krishna. You know? Because justice means what's done properly, you know, like that. And injustice means it's not done according to the rules. What are the Vedic rules for? Pleasing Krishna. So therefore, something being done to please Krishna, that's just. Something not being done for please Krishna, that's unjust. So it's a very different perspective. But on the material world, because they don't have a sense of justice, because it's all about themselves, therefore, then the Vedas will give a measurement of justice that's indirectly connected with Krishna. But their application of that justice isn't real justice, because it's not about how it pleases Krishna. It's just about, it's just because you deal with the material energy how Krishna says it should be dealt with. Right? Because when he performs his pastimes, he interacts with his energies in a particular way. And that gives the nicest, most, you know, the best taste in rasa. Right? So if we're taking that rasa is the important element, that taste of exchange, of devotion, of prema, between the Lord and the devotees, then that means what way of dealing, then that's proper. And not dealing that way is not proper. So, therefore, then the Vedas will simply talk about that, those scenarios, those situations in which it would be favorable to serve Krishna in that, though the people aren't serving Krishna. Does that make sense? It'd be like setting everything up for a festival. Just like, let's say, if, okay, at a material festival, then, you know, there's going to be some formal introduction like that, you know, and you know, respecting whoever needs to be respected, you know, the municipality or this person who gave donation or these people who worked so hard, or, you know, there's going to be something like that in the beginning. Then you're going to have some kind of presentations. There might be some kind of, you know, other entertainment and things like that. There's going to be food. There's going to be decorations. You know, it'll be in some place that's big and open and airy and nice. These are all things that would be done by the Vedas. But they're doing them for themselves. But that's a pious arrangement. How they're using it is impious, because it's not about Krishna. But it's a pious arrangement. Right? So even you see is what people who don't follow the Vedas, if they make a nice festival, this is how it runs. Right? And so now, if you want to now add into it to make a Krishna conscious festival, now all you do is just switch the focus. You know, now it'll be about, you know, the devotees who work so hard, and about, you know, doing all this to please, you know, Krishna and Srila Prabhupada and the Acharyas, and now it's going to be prasad like that. You know, if you're doing a drama or the music and that, it's going to be about Krishna. So all you have to do is just change the consciousness and everything else remains. Right? That's the whole point. But the difficulty comes up is, as Krishna says in the Gita, they get conditioned to the mode of goodness. So they're following the Veda, and it basically produces the best material facility you can get. You know? I say, you know, the best the man can get, you know, that kind of thing. And so that's it. And so they get conditioned to that, and they think it's great. But now if they do come in contact with a devotee, then you switch the continent, and then it's done. It's just like when Lord Chaitanya went down through South India and was preaching, that he got everyone to chant. Nobody had to change their lifestyle. Right? You know, Buddhists might a little bit, but... But everybody else, they're still following all the Vedic culture, everything. They just add Krishna in it and chanting of the holy name. And so it's perfect like that. But then people get conditioned and then they don't. So if they are sincere, that's why in the material world, even you're making all good arrangements, things will go bad at some point. So even though Jaimini says you always do piety, you'll always have good situations, so you'll always be in, you know, a heavenly situation, and you just always do, then eternally you'll be like that. But there's always some flaw. There's always, with fire, there's smoke. And so then, if the person's thoughtful, he'll think, why am I suffering? Even though it's very minor. And then he may take up God consciousness. So that's the advantage to it. What you see is that you could say, oh no, but if it's not so nice like that, we don't follow the Vedic culture, then people will be more miserable and all that. But it's not necessarily they turn to self-realization for the misery. They just come up with a new plan. You know, or go crazy. You know, the guy who's there, you know, he came out, you know, someone, you know, he was going to get there, someone parked in his place, and, you know, he's got one of those, you know, big, huge kind of muscle truck thingies, you know, like that. And he goes nuts and just starts ramming cars and going nuts and everything. That's also a possibility. You know? So, yes.
Also the point, in trying to be just pious, unless one understands one is the level of Vijnanamaya and understand the depth of, like, devotion is higher and all, he always commits some offenses towards devotional process or devotees. And there are many cases in the history, I mean, the Puranas, that somebody gets cursed because of that, because he didn't know. Still ignorance.
Yes. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah, so you're trying to bring about that, but there's going to be something going wrong, because it's the material world. It's designed to go wrong. Like, it's you know, here's the origin of planned obsolescence. You know planned obsolescence? Okay. Obsolescence means it's obsolete, means it's not useful anymore. So they produce stuff before you made something the best you could, and it'll last as long as it does. You know, like that. You know, it's like you see those old, you know, buildings and houses and all that. Even if they were just common houses, you know, in some places I would expect in the old cities, like in London and Paris and some, they have stuff that goes back 200-300 years. And it's just, it was for the common people. Then let alone the big, huge chateaus and big forts that they had that are 400, 500, 600, 1,000 years old. So they built stuff to last. Well, nowadays they build it and it falls apart as they're making it. That way you can make a new one. Like you put up the apartment building because you know after, you know, 10, 20, 30 years, they're going to tear it down and put up something bigger. You know, so cars, they last X amount of time, then they fall apart. So it's telling me, yeah, these things, they fall apart. That so it's telling me that they were doing some work with, I think it was in China. And they went to the manufacturers and they were looking at something to buy for their company. And I can't remember what it was, but let's say just for instance, toasters. And so they have, do you want the one that'll last 3 years or the one that only lasts 2 years or the one that will last 1 year? Same thing, right? Because it's cheaper just to do one kind and like that. And so what's the difference? It depends on what you want to put for your warranty, because the higher the warranty, the more price you have. But the point is the day the warranty runs out, there's a chip inside that will just break it. It won't function. Because everything goes through the chip, so the chip just, you know, self-destructs and it won't work. So it's just built in that it will, to the day, break. So that's planned obsolescence. So the material world is the origin of planned obsolescence. It's going for this much time and it is falling apart. So everything's, you know, temporary. And so that's a problem for us because we're eternal. And so anything temporary does bother us. Right? Variety is okay, but that variety, you know, it's just like, let's say we go someplace and it's a variety, but let's say we go back there after 5 years, we expect it to be the same. It's variety, but the same variety. If we go and it's changed, then we're disappointed. Does that make sense? Yeah. So the aspect that it is for the saintly persons. Those who are not saintly, then at least they can fall back on that net of the Vedic culture and Vedic religion. But as Prabhu pointed out, is that if it's being done nicely, then you're going to start understand about the Vijnanamaya, Anandamaya, and then try to move forward. Because you'll see is that if Manamaya is better than the other two below that, then these other higher ones must be better. So, okay. Riti. After pointing out that all the Vedic knowledge concludes in realization of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Next, the popular misconception of the Maya bodies is addressed. They have so many popular misconceptions. Like the Buddhists have their list of 9 popular misconceptions. So. The Mayavadis claim that Brahman, which is indescribable, can't be expressed by words, and hence the Vedas can't directly describe the absolute truth, but does it indirectly. The next two Anuchetas address this misconception. The next Anucheta particularly elaborates on the doubt of Mayavadis as presented by Maharaj Parikit to Sukadev Goswami in the Bhagavatam. Srila Jiva Goswami in the commentary to this Anucheta points out the fallacies of the argument presented. Is this the one about if direct can't be described in words, why would indirect be able to be described in words? Yeah. Does that make sense? They're saying because it's indescribable, therefore the words of the Vedas can't directly describe. So they can only indirectly describe. But then they're giving potency to words to describe indirectly Brahman. But they're saying, no, they don't have potency to describe Brahman, but they have potency to... So in either case, they're describing Brahman, whether it's direct or indirect. Does that make sense? Yes.
It's actually, they don't accept Veda, because Veda is the words of Brahman.
Yes.
He can describe himself, it's not a problem.
Yes, that's the thing, is that their interpretation describes it, but the Vedas don't. Yeah, so that's what, that. Therefore you see covered Buddhism. Because the Buddhists, as you say, they say it's written by a man, therefore it's fallible, so we're not interested. And you see the Mayavadis will say is Vyasadeva was wrong. Right? And so therefore, it's the same thing. They just come a little closer. You know, it's just like, you know, have a line, they're on this side of the line. But just, you know, if you're going by and you're bumping, they'll fall on the other side. That makes sense. Anucheda 110. It has been shown that Bhagavan is the meaning of the Vedas. King Parikit asks, Brahman, Brahman, Yanir Deshye, Nirgune, Guna, Vrittayaha, Katam, Charanti, Shrutaya, Shrutayas, Sakshad, Sat, Asataf, Pare. O Brahmana, how can the Vedas directly describe the Supreme Absolute Truth, who cannot be described in words? The Vedas are limited to describing the qualities of material nature, but the Supreme is devoid of these qualities, being transcendental to all material manifestations and their causes. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.87.1. Oh, so this is going to give rise to this one. And then there's the Kumaras. And this is a very major point, yeah. The meaning is this. It is seen that the Shrutis have the nature of the material gunas, guna vritayaha, since they are made of words. But Brahman is without material gunas, beyond the gunas, near gune. Thus it cannot be indicated by words, anir desye. It cannot be described because it is not the shelter of the actions, qualities, and varieties arising as the effects of the gunas, and because Brahman cannot be known. So since it's not the one that's the shelter of whatever goes on within the material world, therefore then it can't be described by things within this world. Brahman cannot be known. Okay. It is beyond pare, effect, and cause, sadasattaha. It does not have a relationship with cause and effect. Right? So this is what he's thinking. Right? And so you see, cause and effect, they also don't accept cause and effect. But also, Brahman is beyond, so it can't have any connection with. So if it has no connection, then the things from here can't describe it. The things here can't connect you to it. So that's the whole thing, is they completely separate the Lord from His energies. And then the transformation of His energies, and still He's in control. Even though they transform, He's still in control. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, the literal meaning of a word, mukhya vritti, is produced when the word refers clearly to a particular object. An example of a secondary meaning, gauna vritti, of word, is the word lion in the sentence, Devadatta is a lion. In that sentence, lion means that Devadatta is endowed with bravery like a lion. In the sentence, there is a village on the Ganga. The phrase on the Ganga is figurative, lakshana, since a village cannot be on the Ganga. Right. The village is on the bank of the Ganga. How can the Shrutis use these functions of words, literal, secondary, and figurative? For Brahman, which cannot be the object of direct, secondary, or figurative reference, right? So they'll accept that first part, but they'll think that by their figurative reference, they can describe. The Shrutis being the only means of teaching about Brahman must be said to have the ability to express Brahman. Since we only know about Brahman from the Shrutis, that means then the Shrutis have to have that ability to explain Brahman. Shastra Yoni Tvat. The Lord cannot be known by reasoning because the source of understanding of the Lord is the Upanishads. Brahma Sutra 113. Right? So that's one of the first things that is established. right? You know, it means that, that you must inquire about the Supreme. Everything comes from the Supreme, and the source of understanding that Supreme is the Upanishads. That's the first three sutras. Right? They must do so by the direct meaning, mukhya vritti, since the Shrutis are self-evident, svata pramana. By what method do the Shrutis then express Brahman? By direct expression, mukhya vritti. Please explain the method by your mercy. Otherwise, one is forced to conclude that Brahman is beyond the scope of the Shrutis, because Brahman is not a real object, and anything unreal is not suitable for expression in words. But to speak of Bhagavan, a manifestation superior to Brahman, how can Bhagavan be expressed in words? How did the Lord teach His two devotees, Shrutadeva and Bahulasva? Srimad Bhagavatam 10:86-59. Oh, this comes from that discussion. Wow. The path of the Vedas, the self-evident proof, non-different from you, and the path dedicated to Bhagavan. It must be said that the direct meaning is the method in maintaining the sanctity of self-evident proof, since figurative meaning, lakshana, is the source of interpretation. Right? If it's direct, it's not, but interpretation. Like, you go on all day, what does it mean, on the Ganga? You know, like someone could say, is, no, but there's that city in Mexico that they built it on reeds, and it's floating in the lake. So it can be on the Ganga. And then you point out, no, but that was in Mexico. That's not the Ganga. That's a lake. Ganga is here. We don't see anything here floating. No, but you could do that on the Ganga just like they did. It says, but nobody did do it, so it's not on the Ganga. You know, so like this, they could go on all day. So figurative, then, is the problem. Sarva Sambhadini. In the section on Brahman, some particulars could be shown. If Brahman is indescribable, even using the word indescribable makes subject to description. Or makes it subject to description. Right? So even you're saying indescribable, then or beyond the modes, or without guna, you're saying near guna, you're using a word that has qualities to describe no qualities. Yeah. Like saying the Ganga can be described through indirect expression. Brahman, by being described as indescribable, is described.
What are they trying to prove?
That
you cannot describe it, and so on.
Because if you can't, here's the whole thing, is that they want to say that the ultimate is Brahman, right? And so then the Vedas are pointing out things about Bhagavan and devotional service and other things like that, and how Brahman may not be the highest. So they're trying to say is, the Brahman's the highest, it can't be described by words, so the direct words that they're saying actually can't describe it. You have to describe it through indirect, through lakshana. So that's interpretation. And whose interpretation? Shankara's. And then on Shankara's, their interpretation. Because Shankara doesn't interpret everything. He only takes a few major points that the mundane mind could catch on to and give them something to work with. You know, like that. So their idea is that their interpretation is the absolute. They're not accepting the Vedas, because that would mean then what they're doing won't work. It won't work. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's the difficulty, is that they have their own motive because they want to become God. So this idea that, no, you're an individual, this, because they don't like that. I have an individual, tried so hard, and I didn't get anything, so, you know, in anger you want to get rid of everything. You know, it's just like you're doing something, and it doesn't work out, then sometimes the reaction is you just want to destroy whatever you are working on, because it didn't work. And so that's all they want to do, is they, as the living entity, tried to enjoy the material world by so many ways, they couldn't, so they want to destroy their existence and everything else that exists. So it's just, there's nothing. Like that. So, so, So then they don't, because the Vedas say that there's two, they want to get around that. They want to say is, oh, that's just in this context. Okay, does that make sense? So one could say is, oh, but we're doing the same thing, but no, we're taking the direct meaning. It's not that we're replacing, we're using an indirect meaning. We're taking the direct meaning. You know, so that's the difficulty, is that they only use indirect. Yes.
In these arguments, are they trying to convince themselves or trying to convince everybody else?
Well, generally speaking, when you see somebody has a particular issue, then because it's themselves doing it and themselves is extremely important, therefore everybody else should be doing it, then they'll feel confident doing it. But it takes a very confident person that they do whatever they like despite what anybody else does. You know, it's just like this. There's a fashion going on, right? And so everybody's confidently wearing the fashion. One guy's not wearing the fashion, but he's not confident. So all those confident people will look at him and go, oh, this guy doesn't know how to dress. Right? And that makes them even more confident. Right? Because they can get together and a few of them can point out how he's not fashionable. But now you have another person who is not fashionable, you know, whatever the trend at the time. And they're completely confident. That throws off the confidence of the other guys because their only confidence is that I'm dressing like this and that's why I'm confident. Then this other guy, he's confident and he's dressing differently. So then it's either he's right or we're right. And if he's right, we're completely wrong. Right? Well, for him, he's doing this, that's what he's going to do, and everybody else does or doesn't do, what does he care? So that's the point. The Vaishnavas, this is what the Shastras say, that's what we're doing. We don't care what others think. But others then worry about, oh, what will the public say? What will the academics say? You know, what will the politically correct say? And like that. And so, you know, they never asked about what will the fox say. Yeah. So, like these things is that they just... it's convincing themselves, but to convince themselves, they have to make everybody else convinced. So it's a matter of insecurity. They don't know who they are, and that's a problem. They want to get rid of. So their idea is get rid of their identity, and that will solve it. Rather than no, take up your real identity, because they're holding on to I'm the controller and enjoyer. So even though they're rising up to such a high philosophical platform, even to a transcendental platform, they can't remain there because they don't accept their actual position as servant of the Lord. And he's the enjoyer. We're the servant, he's the enjoyer. Well, we want to be, no, we're this Lord, we're the enjoyer. So by not giving up that linga sharir, then they can't move forward. So you see, as generally speaking, the underlying thing of all philosophies and everything is to control and enjoy. Right? That's why conditioned souls are there, because they want to control and enjoy. They've come here to control and enjoy. So that's always going to be the underlying point. But if you bring it up, no one catches it. I don't know. Going back, I'm not sure if as much as, like, say, 3 years, maybe even 3 years ago, but like 4 or 5 years before, somebody asked a question. And then if you address the actual background, psychological background, why they're asking the question, they'll never agree, even though everybody else in the room understands. They just won't agree. No, that's not why I'm asking the question.
This is embarrassing.
Yeah, because it's embarrassing. So that's why you see all these things are there presented, you know, just like we're saying. Somebody was saying, you know, they were on the plane, and then the person next to him, you know, says, oh, you know, what do you guys, you know, like this and that. And when he got back to the point of you know, devotees and Vedic culture, he says, oh, you guys are the ones with that, you know, how you say, Varnashram, the caste system, you know, where everyone's fixed and the Brahmins then exploit everybody and this and that and the poor Shudras. And the devotee didn't know what to say. And then he was trying to make an official thing. This was would be way back when the beginnings of the dawning of the, you know, kind of leadership rejecting Varnashram. Is that, you know, oh, you know, this is there, and if we have that and we push this, then, you know, these people want to, but why not just learn what you say? Why not learn how to counter and explain what is Daiva Varnashram? You know, how the modern, even the modern society is, you know, does that make sense? It's accepted. That's why they call it intellectuals, administrators, you know, the business community or businessmen are like this, and then your people who work for others who, you know, have the jobs and everything. People understand this, but you just have to make it scientific. So because they didn't understand it, it was out of, like what you said, embarrassment. They didn't want to be embarrassed. So they somehow or another, at least socially, they have a particular kind of ego. They can't tolerate being embarrassed. And at the same time, as they don't necessarily know the, you know, the Shastra. Like once one boy was saying to somebody who was criticizing, you know, about what they're doing, you know, the Vedic thing, and says, no, but in the Shastra says like this, Prabhupada says like that. And they were saying, well, I don't know so much the Shastra. I know, you know, that I think at the time it was more like Kavi or something like that. And that, and it's kind of like that. And so he says, so therefore then we agree to disagree. And it was kind of like, maybe you do, we didn't agree to disagree. You know, I mean, you know, we're agreeing you're wrong. Because you're not basing on Shastra, not on what Prabhupada said. It's just you're basing on a modern take. Like this. But they have all these ways because they're embarrassed, because they don't know. And so they just throw out these phrases and things like that that are just, you know, like defense mechanisms. So that's all. So therefore, you see, is all these different philosophies, all these different, platitudes and this and that that people use. They're all defense mechanisms to explain and justify their particular way they want to control and enjoy. And so you can't get down to that level, because unless you accept that that's not a good thing, that we're servant of Krishna and on all levels, then it's there's no use in discussing that level. You know, you can give as a generalized overall, and then no one's embarrassed, and then they'll think about it and all that. But when you point it out, then it's not appreciated. You know, unless it's in a situation where you can save everybody else but not that person. You know, then that's what you do. But otherwise, then, you know, it doesn't work out. Maybe with time you can get to there once they've accepted. So therefore, the Mayavadis, that's there. They want to control and enjoy. They couldn't as karmis, they want to as jnanis. And so they have their sets on being God. So here's a way to say you're God, because otherwise it's very obvious he's very big and we're very small. He's creating everything and we're not. But if you just take a Brahman and there's no creation, it's illusion. It's like the Buddhists. They say the creation is eternal, but at the same time everything's temporary. You know? Like that, that there is no God, there is no creator. You don't need a creator because creation is always going on. So the difficulty comes up is they want to remove that, because if you remove the creator, then that means I have no obligation to a senior. I can do whatever I want. So then they have their idea of the philosophy, then they can do whatever they want. But if it's a matter of, no, there is God and he's supreme, then we naturally need to follow the authority. They don't want to do that. So they have a philosophy to explain why we can stay in the material world. You know? Like that. You know, like the others, it's like the karmis. And, oh, if everyone becomes devotees, then what will happen to the world? Nothing will go on like that. It says, you know, it's like, you know, one, everybody's not going to, and two, if they did, probably be pretty good, pretty nice, you know. You know, oh, you mean we wouldn't have all these slums and pollution and all this kind of stuff? And yeah, it might be good, yeah. Is that okay?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Yes.
some of the personalists, they say that we go and merge into the Brahman. So their existence is going to get merged. So how the controller and enjoyment will become? Like they are telling they are doing this because...
How will they be the controller and enjoyer when they merge into Brahman?
Yes, yeah, so this will be their existence itself goes up. So
because they're saying Brahman is enjoyment.
But they themselves...
It doesn't make sense. Why are you trying to make sense out of something? If I say 2 plus 2 is 7, you know, why support it? Okay, well, start with that. What would you say to this? It's a very different approach. See, when you start with that, you get a very pleasant answer. When you start with their thing, then you're going to get as nasty an answer as they deserve. So if you want to be the via media for that, great. But if you're sensitive and get upset, why did he talk like that to me? Then don't ask the question like they ask. You understand? Yeah. So the point is if as an individual, then you can enjoy something. But if you merge, there's no enjoyment. It's just existence. Right? Because the soul is Sat, Chit, and Ananda. So they have, the Sat they accept, you know, to some degree. Chit, just enough to understand Sat. But Ananda they talk about, but Ananda only happens when there's two. So that when they merge in Brahman, there is no Ananda. There's the relief of the pain of the material world. You know, it's just like if someone grabs your arm and twists it behind your back. You know, it's uncomfortable. And so when they stop that, for that moment, you'll say, okay, this is nice, this is happiness. But is that happiness? Right? No, it's just a removal of the pain. So that's as far as their so-called Brahmananda will get them. Okay? So it's an illusion. And that's only if there's two. So if it's just one, then yeah, that's it. Just no pain. You know, and as they say, no pain, no gain. So there's no gain.
There's another saying, no brain, no pain.
No brain, no pain. Okay. I mean, for the really big guys. Okay, yeah.
Those who can be happy in this world, the fools.
Okay, these are the fools, okay. Sarva Sambandhini. In the section on Brahman, some particulars should be shown. Oh, we just did this. Okay, then, next page. This is a continuation of the Sarva Sambandhini, no? It would be truly indescribable if it could not be called describable or indescribable. If you can't use either, then that's not... Then it would be completely... Then it would be completely false, right? Because it doesn't exist. If one argues that the word indescribable is lakshana only, one still ends up with Brahman being described. Right? Because even you say is... Oh no, we're only using lakshana to describe because it's indescribable. So, but using indescribable, that's also a description. No, but it's only lakshana. We're only figuratively saying that. But then it's still being described. You're figuratively describing Brahman. One arrives at the toll gate in the morning, so to speak, in spite of attempting to escape the toll. If Brahman is subject only to lakshana, the process of lakshana itself fails since indirect expression alone would not relate to a real object. Right? So if Brahman is real, lakshana can't be able to properly describe it. You know, so if direct they're saying can't describe it, they're saying indirect can, but indirect doesn't actually describe a real object. So then it can only be as Brahman's not real. You know, so that doesn't really work for their philosophy, no? Just as the word Ganga, used only as a lakshana without reference to a real Ganga, would be meaningless. Something indicated only by lakshana does not really exist. Thus, even indirect expression describes real attributes of an object. Right? So the Lakshana is actually describing Brahman. But they're saying Brahman can't be described, you know. So they say the direct can't, but the indirect. But both are describing real things. Right? It says the village on the Ganga. It's a real village, and the Ganga is there. It's just figuratively or their relationship. It just sounds more, more pleasant, more poetic. If one argues that the Lakshana can be described through further Lakshana, one's ups with an infinite regression. The Lakshana must ultimately end in expressing some direct meaning. Thus, by describing Brahman with the words, it is pure substance, self-manifesting and without qualities, one makes it describable. This is not an example of Brahman qualified by Lakshana only, since there is no other meaning than the direct meaning of the words. Well, so they'll say is, oh no, we're using Lakshana. But here, pure substance, self-manifesting without qualities. There wasn't anything there that was Lakshana. It's direct, all direct expression. That one before. If one says that Brahman is endowed with no qualities by the word nirvishesha, no qualities, or is described metaphorically by these words, Brahman is unavoidably described by these words. It means without even trying, you describe it with words. Saying it has no qualities, saying it's nirvishesha. Then, and it's a metaphor, but still you've described it. Some explain that, since it manifests its nature of having no qualities by itself, Brahman is thus simply Brahman. They say that therefore Brahman is not expressed in words, but this is also expression by words, to say it has no quality. Brahman is simply Brahman, but you're still describing by words. One claims that yato vacho nivartate, Taittiriya Upanishad 2.4.1, and calling Brahman ashabdam indicate that Brahman cannot be expressed by words, it is still described by words. You've described by words that it can't be described by words. So that's the point. So if you take the direct meaning, you lose all these problems. Right? In other words, Brahman is there and it can be explained. And how? It's not the words that are doing it, it's when the chit potency. So that's why there's a touch of chit, that's why they get some understanding. Yes?
So the question is, that it cannot be described by the words of the Vedas?
Yes.
And by direct meaning of the words?
Yes.
So only by Lakshana, that's what they say.
Yes, so the Vedas are describing, but not directly. So you have to interpret it to understand it. So in that way, they're basing their authority on the Vedas, but at the same time, as they're not really accepting the authority of the Vedas. So they're indirectly accepting, but that's because of their interpretation. Yeah, yes?
It's difficult to argue because they don't accept Satkarya part, but just not getting to that, just logically, if we say the direct meaning and the Lakshana, the direct meaning is always exist.
Yes.
And the Lakshana depending on the direct meaning.
Yes, yes.
So if we take cause and effect,
yes,
then the direct is always the cause.
Yes.
And then the Lakshana is effect. So how can effect be there without the cause?
Yes.
It's highly logical.
Yes.
So just on the logical point, doesn't matter what we discuss.
Yes.
The mukhya vritti is always there, but the gona vritti, it depends on the mukhya vritti. It doesn't exist without that.
Yes.
has no existence separate.
Yes, exactly. Yes, very good. That was what he was saying. The lakshana must ultimately end in expressing some direct meaning. So lakshana has to go back. That's very nice. Yeah. Yes.
Also, the whole thing is before, when people were karmakandis, they were using the philosophy at the level of Jaimini to defeat everybody else who is saying that they are not correct.
Right.
Then Lord has to come to remove them and then give the whole Buddhist philosophy, and then immediately from there take back to the next level, the Vedanta. So that connection, like flipping back and then going directly to Vedanta, then there is that period where, like, some Buddhists, they have to connect back. So that for them, as it is pointed out by one of the, I think, Madhvas Acharyas, he said there are only two things that have changed. One is from Nirvishesha to Brahman, that the ultimate goal is Nirvana,
Nirvana to
Brahman.
To Brahman, okay.
That is the ultimate goal. And material world doesn't exist too. Material world is illusion.
Doesn't exist and it's an illusion. Yeah. Okay, one is it's false and the other is an illusion.
Illusion.
Yeah, so it's just, they're all synonyms, right? Yeah. So, yeah. Otherwise, then it's Buddhist philosophy.
Because the Mayavadis, though they say it's illusory, they say it's practical at the level of, I mean, it's a practical reality, means Vyavaharika level. For day-to-day thing, it's reality. For Buddhists, even in the day-to-day level, it's just a concept in mind.
It's just a concept. Oh yeah, remember when we were discussing the four kinds of Buddhists, the four levels?
The Dhamma Sutra.
Yeah. Remember, it was going back to that. I don't remember the names of them, but they were basically two groups. You know, one that whatever you see is completely illusion, and the other one is that it's not it's kind of illusion. You know, the one is that you're practically here, you can use it, you can get somewhere, they're the softest. Then the other one says you can use it, but it's actually illusion. Next one, it's illusion, but you know, you can still work with the other one. It's just illusion, there's nothing here. Like that. So, yeah, it's just each one more. Yes, yeah. Like that, yeah. So it's like, now you can see is that the last one, it end up with some very strange mentalities and rituals and stuff like that. Yeah, because you just add more and more ignorance, more and more destructiveness. Yeah, okay. Where were we?
Kasmat.
Kasmat. Okay. Kasmat uchate brahma iti brihan ati bri mayati tasmat uchate param brahma. Why is it called Brahman? It is called Supreme Brahman because it increases and causes increase. Atharva Shirish Upanishad. Yeah, because it's ever expanding. So that means it's ever expanding, it's increasing. Paramatmeti chapyukto dehesmin purushah paraha. There's also a supreme person in the body called Paramatma, the great Lord, Bhagavad Gita 13:23. Thus, the Brahman is directly expressible by words. Right, so you can directly express. You know, that. Yes. That Paramatma is Ishwara. Ishwara can be there, we can be there, but we're all one, so we're Ishwara. That's why they call each other Narayana. Right? Instead of that the thing of the two, they seem to accept the Narayana more than the Jiva. So then, because they're saying the Jiva is illusion, but at the same time is by their philosophy, Ishwara is also technically illusion. Right? And so, but we're Ishwara. Why not we're Jiva? You know? Like that. But the... Yeah. they're just, you can see is what their motive is. See, because we're coming from ignorance, and then from us contemplating it and coming up with knowledge, then you get Brahman covered by that, you get Ishwara. So in that way, Ishwara is coming from the covering of Brahman by knowledge. Right? While we're the covering of ignorance. So therefore, status-wise, then Ishwara is better than us. So therefore, then we're Narayana. But the point is if that's all an illusion, why don't they just say, you know, whatever it is, Namo Brahman, or whatever it is. But they don't. So that's the thing, is mistakes they make belie their position that they're living entities, you know, and their condition. So even though they're trying to do something seemingly spiritual, they technically only touch on it. They don't really. So.
No touch with the cheapness.
No, just a touch. Only just a very minor amount. Okay. Very minor. Yes.
It seems that the.
Oh, so you weren't pointing at the bird. Is the bird flew like this, and then at that time you went.
The bottom line seems to be is that we have that personal experience when we want to enjoy or exploit whatever it is, we have to depersonalize it.
Yes.
Because if it's a person, it's really difficult because they fight back.
Yes, yes.
But if we say, this doesn't exist, this is matter, there's nothing spiritual, then we can exploit anything, including God himself.
Yes, yes.
So this seems to be the like inner motive of their whole philosophy.
Yeah, definitely. And that, and Prabhupada's mentioning to extend that, is that the whole, you know, basically Western world is nirvishesha-nirvadi. And so they're doing the same thing. You put something, you classify it in an impersonal group, then you can exploit it.
Yeah.
You know?
That's why I guess Vivekananda, when he arrived to America, everybody accepted philosophy. But they were already doing it, but without philosophical
reason. Yeah, without the philosophy.
But then he came.
And now they have a reason, yeah. There was one, I've seen it, I don't know if you've ever seen it. There's a picture of Vivekananda dressed in a, I think like a tuxedo, like that. You know, with this, with the hair, the gel in the hair, and the hair done nicely and all that. He's all dressed up, big grin on his face. He's got his arms, you know, out like this. And there's a girl on each arm.
No.
Yeah. It might have been just a picture for the thing, but the point is it was. It didn't look like it was just what do you call it? Just a formal picture that they came up, picture, yeah, okay, and then they went away. It seemed to be a little bit more that he was in the enjoying spirit. But I think it's generally interpreted he's just, you know, being nice and all that. But it's an official picture. Some devotees said that they saw it in is it Kanyakumari? This very bottom?
Yeah. Yes, yes.
Out in the ocean, there's a little dinky island.
Yes, yes.
And in that island, there's a museum to Vivekananda.
Yes.
Oh, okay, but at least that you said this picture was there.
Yes. Yes.
You saw?
Been
you've been.
Oh, really?
Oh, wow.
I was.
There's a bridge, or you just walk when the water's low?
By boat.
Oh, by boat? Oh, okay. Yeah, I've only heard of it.
And it's always very stormy, it's really windy, and they say that you can see the end of the world from there. It's always sea. You see?
The end of the world, because if the boat goes down, that's the end of the world.
Yeah, it's funny of the mice, I'd say it's the, what is the south, this east point.
Yeah.
Then it goes in the direction.
Okay, yeah.
They have a big Vivekananda place in the
compound there. Lots of people, very clean.
On the island?
Yeah.
So it's a big place. Oh, okay. I thought it was just like there's a rock with a little building on it.
The building is big.
Okay, it's a big building. Okay.
It's quite a few rooms and lots of people and standing areas and seating areas.
Oh, okay.
It's quite new, I think. At least it's clean.
It's clean, though. I thought they talked about it back in the 80s.
I think they renovated it.
Oh, maybe renovated. No, because I think it's been there for quite a while.
Yeah, because Kanyakumari itself is pretty endowed, but this thing is well kept.
Okay.
Oh,
okay. Yeah, it's like when we had the martial arts master come over, then part of the thing was is they wanted to visit in Calcutta Mother Teresa's place. You know, it's like, you know, while we're here, yeah, let's go. You know, so they're very impressed by these things. Like you were saying, they get very impressed.
90% of the people visit because others say that, oh, you don't go to this place. That's okay. The main reason. At least Indians want to visit.
It's also because there's nothing else to see there, basically.
There's nothing else. Well, you can also not go there.
You drive all the way to there.
Oh, to Kanyakumari, and so it sends you there, then you're
from. It's like another half an hour.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Take a picture and say that you've been to the end of the world.
Okay, then you can go. So Kanyakumari and Kanyakubja are the same?
No.
Kanyakubja is somewhere else.
Kanyakubja is Gulvamangal Thakur's birthplace.
Okay, that's another
that
place.
That is in Kanpur.
Oh, okay. Kanpur. So it used to be Kanya something.
Only
like Mangalapuram became Mysore. Okay, so Kanyakubja something became Kanpur. Okay, now I get it. Since Brahman is, thus the Brahman is directly expressible by words, right? You know, but as explained before, there is that aspect of the chit potency. But the point is, the words are the perfect medium for carrying this chit potency if you use the direct meanings as given by Guru Sadhu and Shastra. Since Brahman is the subject of Brahma Sutras by inference, it becomes expressible by words since it's a real object capable of description, like a pot. Words like spiritual or pure existence are used to express it, just like the word pot. Statements that Brahman is existence and knowledge express meaning since they are words like sacrifice. The words cannot be given figurative signification only. A figurative word on its own does not produce a direct conception of an object, since it does not have that shakti. On seeing that meaning inappropriate to what was previously understood and giving it up, one understands another meaning by a relationship with words expressing direct meaning. On using the word Ganga as Lakshana, on not seeing the Ganga, one must take the word to mean something else. Right? So it has to mean, be connected to something real. By accepting only negative statements in Shruti, which say that Brahman cannot be expressed in words, some claim that Brahman is knowable only through meanings expressed by Lakshana. Right? So that's their interpretation. Right? Since Brahman, which is supposed to be attained only through the Vedas, would be unknowable by words, since all words would be useless to establish Brahman, which is eternally perfect and self-manifesting. Since words with Lakshana signification actually express what is supposed to be inexpressible, and since even figurative meanings only become comprehensible by relationship with words, having direct meaning, the proposition is inconclusive. How can figurative words describe that? How can figurative words describe what cannot be related to by to cannot be related to figure words describe what cannot be related to, I guess, just words. But you want to say any meaning, you want to make it all-inclusive. But to be related to by any words. Yeah. So it's just that the you can't say if it can't be discussed directly that it now indirect will describe it. It's still words. And the indirect words have to relate to a direct word. Otherwise they don't have any meaning. Because indirect means you're indirectly going to something. You know, it's just like you can go straight down the block, down the road, or go around the block and get there. But you're going to the same place. The reference is the same point. Right? You know, so Ganga is still the same point. So there is a Ganga. It's just that the village is not on the Ganga. It's on the bank of the Ganga. You know, it's not floating on the water there. Does that make sense? Right? Unless, you know, from the previous description about pot, you know, there's too much of that, then you might see it floating on the Ganga. But otherwise, then, no. Right? Vritti. In response to the doubt presented by Parikit Maharaj, in the next Anucheda, Sukadeva Goswami expresses that the ultimate purpose of the creation of material world and the subsequent creation of upadis is to understand one's constitutional position as servant of the Supreme Lord and engage in His service. So, the only reason that the material world has its purpose and all the upadis and all the difficulties so that we start relating with our constitutional. If we see here is that in the conditional state, nothing's working properly, not satisfying, then we'd inquire, is there something beyond? That's the constitutional. Thus, when the jiva becomes favorable to the Lord because of the manifestation of chit shakti in the intelligence, mind and senses, they act without the gunas. Words also act the same way, since they are composed of intelligence, etc. The conclusion is that the Shrutis function by taking support of the Lord's spiritual sarup. Thus the Lord can be described by human words. Right? But it's not just the words, it's how they're carried. Right? Anucheda 111. Sukadeva replies, Bhudindriya mana pranam janaanam ashritat prabhu matrartam cha bhavartam cha atmane kalpanaya cha. The Supreme Lord manifested the material intelligence, senses, mind, and vital air of the living entities so they could indulge their desires for sense gratification, take repeated births to engage in fruitive activities, become elevated in future lives, and ultimately attain liberation. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.87.2. The Supreme Lord created the upadis like intelligence for various purposes for the sleeping jivas, jananam, jananam. He did not create jivas by his ignorance, right? They weren't created by the Lord's ignorance. They're part of the internal potency. But they're sleeping, they're under ignorance. You know, because of being under ignorance, they're referred to as sleeping. But jivas aren't produced from ignorance, because that's also your theme in the philosophies, is that here is that the living entities are produced due to avidya, right? You know, and so it has, they're not coming from the ignorance like that. They're produced from you know, as one of his shaktis, from his swarup. They come under ignorance. And then by removing that ignorance with actual knowledge, then you get out. So they have kind of an idea that there's some ignorance there, and by knowledge then you'll relieve that. But the problem is they don't see the Lord. They're coming from Him. By His illusory energy, they become covered. Then, and so by removing that illusion, then you come back to understanding the Lord and your position with Him. But because they draw the line before the Lord, they can't actually properly understand anything. You know, so if you have part of an equation, you know, it's just like, let's say, yeah, like sometimes you see in the arrangement between the kitchen and the dining room, that sometimes you have, besides the door, you kind of have an opening with a counter, you know? And so then, you know, food to eat goes on that counter. And so then if you're not completely understanding, you can think that the counter produces the food. But actually it's the person on the other side of that counter who's producing the food. So that's it. They only see up to the counter and that's it. So they're an illusion. So even though they're very intelligent, and they have philosophies about how the food comes on the counter, you know, they philosophize about it rather than just the kid who grabs it and eats it, just the gross materialists, you know, they have a philosophy. But they're both in ignorance. Yeah. So. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki. Jai.